So, as you know, a couple of weeks ago, I went to spring training.
I did.
And
I heard this.
I learned this marketing sponsorship thing. I didn't know if you heard of it. So
I've
here's,
never, yeah.
I had to learn this from my son. So basically, there's a sponsor patch on the shoulder of every player, and
And
every
that's new,
team is,
right? That's new?
that's a newer thing.
Okay.
So
Like
Cleveland
soccer
Guardians,
now. Yeah.
yeah, exactly. Cleveland Guardians are sponsored by Marathon Gas or something like that.
Okay.
But what I didn't know is that this patch goes on a different place depending on which way you bat. So
Oh.
if you're a right-handed batter, it's going to go on your left shoulder because that's the one facing the television. Did you know this?
I did not know this.
And if you're left-handed, it's going to go on the other one. Or if you're a switch hitter, it's probably going to go on your right shoulder because most of the time you're batting
What
left-handed.
if you go what if you go both ways?
Well, that's I think whatever. Next.
And now for your listening pleasure, here's Polizzi and Rose, covering the week of media, marketing, and digital content news. This Old Marketing. Take it away, boys.
Well, hello, my friends, and welcome to this special episode of This Old Marketing, proudly brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. And welcome to episode number 418 for March 8th, 2024. And with me, as always, is my pal, my colleague, and a guy who's yet again somewhere sunny, Mr. Joe Polizzi.
I am.
Yes.
I am. I'm
As
current,
we record this.
as we record this, I'm in Tampa.
Yeah.
I believe. I think. Not sure.
Tampa.
But we're enjoying Busch
Tampa.
Gardens, Tampa.
You should go to my sister's house. My sister lives in Tampa.
Really?
Yeah.
I was not aware of that. I thought I knew it was Florida, but I didn't know it was Tampa. I love
it is,
unlike
it's
you, I
outside, it's
love
one of the million little cities that are outside of Tampa. It's like Florida is just one giant, you know.
Tell me what you really
mini
feel.
mall. Yeah, it's like every 10 feet is a 7-Eleven mini mall, and they give it a name, right? It's like, you know, there's Coral Gables and Coral Shores and Coral Sea Shores and Coral this and Pink that and Flamingo City, and you know, it's basically just a 7-Eleven and an Arco station.
Speaking of that, did you hear the thing about Trader Joe's in Springfield?
No.
There was a thing that came. Trader Joe's had this whole thing. They said they were launching a new store in Springfield, and the Springfield and Springfield, Illinois got all, no, Missouri, Springfield, Missouri got all excited.
Oh,
but
okay.
it was not Springfield, Missouri. It was Springfield, Virginia. And then there's all this talk about there's too many Springfields.
But including The Simpsons, right?
Including
I thought
The
you were
Simpsons,
going with The
which
Simpsons.
is the
Yeah.
most important. Yeah, I think there's a Springfield, Indiana, Ohio, Virginia, Missouri.
I guarantee you
there's
there's a Springfield, Texas somewhere. I mean,
I'm sure there's a
in Texas,
Springfield.
every
It's
kind of
probably
name.
Coral Springfield, Florida.
I'm sure there is.
Or something. But anyways, but
Springfield Shores. It's a gated community, really, for the retired. Yeah. It's somewhere near the Keys, I would think.
Oh my God. Well, it's good that I'm in Florida because we get to do this very special, as you say, blossom episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Of This Old Marketing. But before we start, I do want to mention, because I have to do this on every episode. We have our live This Old Marketing that is going to be at Content Entrepreneur Expo, the number one event for content creators and entrepreneurs. And Robert and I are doing a live This Old Marketing brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. I think I have to say that. I think I'm legally bound to say that.
Something.
So, something yeah. like that. But thank you for their support. We're able to bring this to you. And we want you to be a guest on This Old Marketing live in Cleveland, May 5th through 7th. Go to cex.events, register. But when you register, put in the discount code TOM, TOM100. You save yourself $100. And at the same time, you'll put yourself into a drawing to possibly be our guest. We would like to talk to you. We're going to have a fun time. It will be great. You will be immortalized as our fifth guest ever, or something like that.
Yeah,
this old marketing.
It's amazing. There's a jacket involved, I hear. You get some sort of jacket or trophy.
Hey, I think you'll get one of these wonderful books. Sweatshirts that I have.
Books.
I'm wearing this thing. It says books. We're launching Tilt Publishing, our new imprint for content entrepreneurs, and this is one of our shirts. This is.
It's books. Not boobs. Right, it's books.
Chest. It's not boobs. It's books.
Books.
Get it? I tell you, your mind goes in the gutter.
Of course.
Every episode.
My inner 17-year-old is alive and well. Yes. There is no doubt about that.
But the hat is from Millie's Market in Nantucket. If you've ever been there, it's splendid.
You're a walking branded story is what you are.
I'll tell you what. Note to everyone. If you send me a hat, I'll probably wear it on the show.
Oh, there you go.
I just do that because I love hats. I have a hat fetish. Hats and shoes.
My inner 17-year-old has a joke ready at the helm, but I'm not even going to go there.
Anyways, this I really feel good about this being our best episode ever.
Should be fun. It should be fun.
Yeah, so what are we doing? What are we doing this episode?
We're going to have a good time because one of the things that we know, without even talking with each other, we both presented and got to see each other and hang out at Social Media Marketing World. And we both, like we often do, we gave presentations that are complimentary to each other and are both good best practices that we've observed and seen and start to, work on with various our constituencies, as they were. And so as we started to compare notes, we went, wow, this might be a nice special episode where we talk about what we talked about and sort of where we think things are with content marketing, with audience building, with content creation, all the kinds of things that both of us talked about in our presentation. So we thought we'd sort of take the main points, distill them down, because so many of you obviously didn't get to San Diego to see Social Media Marketing World, and distill them down into a quick discussion about the major sort of lessons learned from our presentation and do it as a show. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to spend the next few minutes talking about that. Joe has got his 7 steps to new modern content marketing success. And I have my, what I call marketing to media, how marketing is fundamentally changing to a trust-based model to get, and really how you scale that if you're a small business of one or a giant business of 1,000. And we'll go back and forth with our sort of major findings, major best practices, et cetera, et cetera. How do you like it?
And it was nice because both of us had good crowds, which was
great.
Was nice. Content marketing is always like the go-to.
A popular session. Topic. Yeah.
It's very, very popular because it's not about the tools, folks. It's
what
you put in those pipes that matter.
That's right. That's it.
We're going to talk about that.
In my little promotional video on my website, that's what I say. It's not the technology. It's what you put in the technology. It's the content.
He's like, AI is not a strategy. Copyright, trademark, Robert Rose.
Oh, my God. Did you read that or did I say that? Because no. I've been saying that lately.
You said 2 episodes ago. You did the whole thing like AI. You were very serious. You're like, darn it all, damp gummit. AI is not a strategy. I'm tired of people saying it is.
Oh, that's very funny. That's very funny.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. It's funny because it's true. All right. So, do you want to start with your first one?
So I always do this. It's the 7 steps to success with content marketing, but I had 8. So we're going to go back and forth. I will share the 8 and just talk a little bit about them as we go. So the first one is building the base. I've talked about this for a long time. What happens with a lot of content creators and content marketers, they believe that when they start off and they're trying to build an audience, that their content has to be everywhere. What happens is they end up boiling the ocean. It does absolutely nothing. Trying to boil the ocean. That's right. Yeah. And basically what you need to do is you need to find where your show is going. Your what do you call it? Like, I think you call it like your center base.
Center of gravity.
So whether that's your e-newsletter, Whether that's TikTok, whether it's YouTube, it depends on what you're doing. You can make the decision. Like it's like a Harry Potter sorting hat. Like you have a say in where you want your base to be. But when we look at all the best examples from Red Bull to Mr. Beast to Content Marketing Institute, you go on any media company out there, everyone starts by mastering one thing, doing that really well over a long period of time, consistently delivering. And then once you build a minimum viable audience, then you can go ahead and diversify out. So I always like to start off my presentations with that, because especially at something like social media marketing world, everybody's like, I got to be on every social media channel. It's like, no, you don't. You know, strategy is about choosing. Strategy is about saying no to many, many things, so you can say a big emphatic yes to one thing. So if you're kind of trying to figure it out, you might need to say, look, I need to find out where I'm going to build my base at, start there, deliver consistently, and then move on. That moves on to my second point, and I've talked about this forever, but it's still the biggest issue, and that's finding your content tilt. And that's really finding your area of differentiation where you can break through all that clutter out there and actually build an audience, actually have a chance to build a loyal audience. And if I had to say that there's one thing that holds back content creators or content marketers, is they're mired in sameness with hundreds, if not thousands, of other organizations that are creating the same kind of content the same exact way, and you're never going to build an audience. And when I say most, I'd say like 95%. So what hurts me more than anything is if they say, oh, they're doing all the things, right? They're consistently delivering. They found their base where their center of gravity is going to be. They're delivering over and over again. And then I can look at it and say, well, there's no hook here. There's no differentiation. You're not, even if you do all the right things and you even promote that content, you integrate it with everything else you're doing, it probably isn't going to work, because there's nothing there for people to grasp onto, because it's not differentiated. And you could do that in lots of different ways. You could say, oh, we're going to focus on a more niche target audience. We're going to focus on a content area that we feel we can be the leading informational experts in the world at. You could have a different kind of personality. You could put your program on a platform that nobody's using right now. You could do all those things, but you have to figure out what is that area. And the quick example that I want to share is, and you and I were both involved in this, when Content Marketing Institute decided to not create content for all marketers, we said we're really going to focus on enterprise marketers our key target, because we knew that if we were going to continue to create that content the way we were running up against HubSpot and 10,000 other companies that were creating content marketing and inbound marketing education. And we're like, well, where can we be the leading experts in the world? But that really was that focus upstream enterprise. We made that decision in what, 12 or 13, changed our stars. Everything went great from then on. But a lot of people don't make that decision. So those are my first two: building the base,
love it,
and really focusing on your content tilt.
Yeah, love it. I mean, it's you know, on the base thing, the thing is, it's such good advice, you know, when you start thinking about it, but to make sure that people don't misunderstand what you're saying, it's as an entrepreneur or as a business, you start with the one thing, right? It doesn't mean that you can't be on X and Threads and, you know, whatever, and, you know, sort of, you know, have a social media presence or use other channels to promote that center of gravity, right? It's that, you know, you don't build your base, you know, in more than one place, right? Don't try to build more than one home base at a time and then diversify from there. So do that one thing great, whether it's a blog, whether it's a newsletter, whether it's a, you know, a podcast or whatever it is you're doing to build your base first. But you can use the other channels to promote, to drive people, to have a personal presence if you want to have a personal presence or whatever it is. But that's the key, is the business focus, right? Yeah. That strategic focus.
Well, you and I have been in many consulting calls together where it's like, oh, here's the campaign. We're going to launch the podcast, the newsletter, the YouTube show, the research project. We're doing it all at once.
Yeah.
And exactly. We're like, that's not going to work. It's absolutely not going to work, because it never works. And then we have to say, this is how media companies do it. They start with one home base and then they diversify once they build an audience. Let's do that.
That's right.
Let's do that. So, all right, what do you got?
I got, so with the first one, it's again, yeah, it's complimentary to what you just said, and it's a nice way for us to kick things off in terms of the sort of folding in of the two ideas, which is, so there's no doubt that we have seen a trend of companies, whether it be content creators or big businesses that are doing content marketing, focus in on owned media, right? So, you know, we talk, you know, we probably nauseatingly talk about it too much, but owned media is really our passion. And the interesting thing to me is why, right? What is it we're trying to do with that owned media? And in 2024, what we're seeing more and more is that it's about brand and relationships, right? And here's what I mean by that, is that establishing, you know, an engaged audience, and we can talk about measurement, and later on I will talk a little bit more about measurement, but the idea is, and in, we just, it just, you know, that this is right. Inherently, you know that an engaged audience that wants to hear from you is going to do stuff in, you know, is going to do stuff you want them to do in higher propensity than someone who isn't, right? Yeah. It just makes sense, right? If I'm engaged with you in a different kind of relationship, then I'm going to do more things because I trust you, because I'm engaged with you, I like you, et cetera. So I'm going to be top of mind when I want to buy something. I'm going to stay a little more loyal. I'm going to close the lead a little faster, whatever those things are. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. So, but the problem is that as we've sort of evolved out of social media, the whole idea of a relationship has changed because, you know, I told this story at Social Media Marketing World. I went to Social Media Marketing World in 2015 and 2016, and it was a huge event. And everybody there, in varying degree, would talk about social media as building your community, having a relationship with your audience on social media channels. And inevitably, someone would get up and say something like, well, they were going to be contrarian. And they would say, you know, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, you know, I really want a better relationship with my butter provider, right? You know, or nobody wants a better relationship, you know, nobody wakes up and goes, gosh, I wish I had a better brand relationship with the generator that I just bought, right? Nobody does that. And that always struck me as a little cynical, right? It struck me as a little cynical because the idea is that that's true. It's nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I need a better, you know, I need a better relationship with my butter provider or my generator provider. However, that doesn't negate or even change the need for the butter provider or for the generator provider to have a better relationship with its customer, right? In other words, just because one doesn't actually need it, it doesn't negate the need for the brand to actually try and create a relationship. And creating that relationship is important. So you start to ask yourself, if you're a brand, well, okay, I need a reason. I need them to want a reason to have a relationship with me that goes beyond my product or service. Because again, buying butter doesn't, you know, there's just not that deep of a relationship. Buying a generator, it's not that deep a relationship. But if I change the nature of that relationship, well, now I have a better shot at it. And the greatest example of that is, and I use this example all the time, and I've even used it on this show before, is Amazon and Amazon Prime, right? So if you look at Amazon Prime Video, it's a horrible business. It's an awful, stinky business, right? They spend they have $2.5 billion in revenue, and they spent $22 billion on content. You know, I don't care how Hollywood math you do there. That's a bad business, right? You would shut that business down. But they don't, because of course what they know is that Amazon Prime, becoming an Amazon Prime member, is a relationship that they value. And if you're an Amazon Prime member, guess what? You spend 2x as much on Amazon on a year-to-year basis. So their best way to create a relationship, because nobody wakes up and says, I need a better relationship with my, you know, my retailer, right? I need a better relationship with Walmart, and I need a better relationship with Amazon. Nobody wakes up that way. But if you can create a reason separate from them to have a relationship with you, hey, they give me cool content. They give me cool movies, TV series, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you're much more inclined then to become a Prime member, and thus you are much more inclined to spend more. Thus, it becomes a very smart business decision for them to create a reason for you to have a relationship with Amazon that goes beyond free shipping. And that's the key that we need to think about as we start thinking as content creators and as brands. What are the reasons that we can create an owned media property or some sort of content experience that makes our customer, encourages our customer, inspires our customer to have a deeper relationship with us than we otherwise would. The perfect example of that I always use as well is Schneider Electric, right? Schneider Electric, huge B2B company that sells, you know, everything from generators to, you know, all kinds of things for electrical engineers. Well, they have their Schneider University, which they've put 500,000 people through their Energy University, which is a certified educational program that you can take for free. And basically, they're creating engineers and a relationship with engineers. So guess who's top of mind with those engineers as the brand that brings them the highest value? That's the kind of thing we're talking about here in 2024 that is truly the business case for why you put together a content marketing owned media experience.
No, I love that because, you know, I mean, it's the core to content marketing because you can't reach out to your customers and hit them with product messages every time.
That's right.
You can't. Give yourself an excuse to contact your customer with something value.
Yeah.
And be of service to them. And that's what that's the best part. I mean, that's really why I think that, I mean, of course, content marketing at its roots is a loyalty play.
Yeah.
The custom magazines from way back in the day or books or programs.
Teaching customers to be better customers.
That's right. That's my favorite way to go. And that's by the way, why content marketing marketers, those organizations that are doing some kind of content marketing have an advantage over media companies. Because they, if you just look at the top line and the bottom, you don't have to be profitable.
Exactly.
Amazon doesn't have to be profitable with that because they know they're creating better customers.
Yep. That's it.
Prime. Really, really good example. All right. So that leads into my next two. So my third one is, and I have to mention this because, as you know, I come from a publishing background. And when I started in publishing in 2000, by 2001 or two, I started to get some control over some P&Ls. And I was being taught, here's how you run a P&L for a media business. And when you look at growth for the next year, you almost invariably, and marketers do this, we always think organically. So we think about that, or marketers think about that with their content. It's like, well, what are we going to launch? Audio, what are we going to do in video? What are we going to do on social? And how are we going to do it? And we always think, hey, what can we create? Which is fine. Marketers tend to do that. But if you're a publisher, you don't think that way. You think, okay, well, some of this is going to be organic. But first and foremost, is there any businesses out there we can acquire? Is there anybody doing the podcast that we should be doing? Is there anybody doing the event that we should be doing? And you always look to buy first because you can shorten your time to market and build and buy that audience and that content brand and save yourself 2 or 3 years. So I'm not going to go into the example. We talked about Arrow Electronics is a great example. We talk about HubSpot buying The Hustle is a great example. You and I were part of when Content Marketing Institute went and bought the Magnum Opus Awards that became the Content Marketing Awards. When we bought Intelligent Content Conference that became Content Tech. I mean, those are just decisions that you say, hey, don't just have your first instinct go to creating something.
Yeah.
Look out there and just a simple, you know, create a simple wish list. Like if you're doing proper research, and I've always felt that content marketers should understand the art of acquisition. That's a very important part of being a content marketer today. So make your list of, oh, okay, well, if we had all the funds in the world, we could buy this YouTube show. We could buy this newsletter. We could buy whatever. And then start to work with that organization. You don't have to say, I want to buy you. First thing is partner with them on something.
Yep.
Do a co-branded project together. Do a documentary. Do a research project. Do something where you can come together. And then you might find some opportunities to work together. And by the way, that's how Lulu Press was the biggest sponsor for CEX, our event. And they wanted to create their own show. And instead of going ahead and launching their own show, they just bought CEX, which made perfect sense. And that was something that I wanted as well as the owner. And it was fantastic. So I guess I would just say, don't have your first instinct be, always got to build.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can go out and buy.
100%.
So that's that one. And then the other one, I titled it Creators Over Content, Robert. And basically what I'm seeing, and I think you're seeing this as well as a lot of B2B companies, is that a lot of the content that we're sending out isn't coming from the brand. It isn't coming from the content brand. It's coming from a creator inside. And what we're seeing more and more content marketing organizations become, it's almost like little creator incubators.
Oh, wow.
Where they're investing in the creators. So you'd say, and Indium has done this. Like we've talked about Indium manufacturing of industrial soldering equipment. They had a blog called From One Engineer to Another. And it used to, when they started, it was like 30 or 40 different engineers creating all these blogs. Well, now they really just have one. They have one engineer that's sort of their main go-to person. They're helping, you know, they're basically investing in that person. I think it's Dr. Lasky is his name. And they focus on helping him with his social media. They put a lot of trust in him. The emails come from Dr. Lasky. You know, those types of things are very important. And you're seeing creators do this, by the way. If you look at Jay Klaus has a content brand called Creator Science. The emails don't come from Creator Science. It comes from Jay Klaus.
Right.
So we're seeing a lot of that personalization. Companies, individuals want to be have relationships with other individuals. So give them that opportunity. So I think especially on a B2B side, I'd love to see it more on the consumer side as well. I think there's an opportunity to put more of your focus on helping internal creators tell better stories, become part of your content marketing organization. It's a little bit scary. You might think it's like, oh, hey, what if they leave? And you know what? That's fine. They might leave.
Yeah.
But what the opportunity is there for you to build your content marketing program, to build audiences, to see the return on those audience happen quicker if you invest in individuals in your organization instead of these broad brands.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Good stuff. Yeah, I love that. It is sort of that. Well, you know, and the funny thing is that it segues beautifully into my second one here, which is the idea of looking at things as product, right? Looking at your content as product, and you know what I talked about in the presentation was, you know, one of the things that often gets lost is we have this sort of mythology built up in our head. And we can actually, because we're so used to the campaign and marketing oriented mindset, that we get into this sort of, well, what do audiences want? What are they asking for? What do they want? What do they want? And that can really hinder us, because as we start to think about our content program as a product, as a thing that's going to last, not just, you know, for a campaign, not just for a flight, but for years, ostensibly, it should become our, you know, sort of heart and soul for many of the things we're doing. It is that product marketing or product launch oriented mindset of what we're doing here. And I use the example, you know, of the, you know, I showed this image of basically the Rubik's Cube, the iPhone, Michael Jackson's Thriller album, and the Toyota Corolla. And I ask everybody, like, what do those four products have in common? And of course, the four things that they have in common is that they're four of the 10 most sold products in the entire planet, right? But here's the thing. Nobody woke up in the morning going, you know what I really need? I need like a multicolored cube that's going to drive me insane, right? You know, or, you know, I need a phone that I can swipe, you know, and use my finger on the touchscreen. What I really need is an album from Michael Jackson that talks about scary stuff and is really cool to dance to, right? Or I need a car that, you know, does all the things that a Toyota Corolla does. But yet, that's what we think of. And when we're trying to develop content, is all of this access for what it is we're actually trying to do. And so the goal and my sort of best practice is you will, if you do this properly, you will think about the product first. You'll have the idea first, and that's okay, right? It's okay if you go, you know, what I really want to do is I want to build a cool email newsletter. I want to build a really cool website, or I want to build a really cool podcast, or I want to build, that's all right. But to your point, both just what you said, as well as sort of the first part where you talk about the hook, is you've got to have not the first or the second idea, like what everybody's asking for. Rather, think about the third, the fourth, the fifth idea when you start really getting into it. And the example I use all the time there, and you've heard me use this example on the show before, is the consulting company that's in the financial services space that basically they're 12 people. And their clients, their audience are hedge fund managers and chief investment officers and, you know, people who buy low and sell high. So you go, what's the newsletter? Like, we want to do a newsletter for loyalty. What should that be? And of course, the first idea is, well, let's do a newsletter about Brexit, or let's do a newsletter about the economy or interest rates or, you know, some economic news. And it's like, no, everybody's got that. Nobody woke up in the morning wanting more of that. What they want is what's not there. What's not, what cool thing isn't there that they would get value out of? And what they found was it was a book club. It was literally a book club where they would send a, you know, and not books on investing, but rather books on, you know, entertainment, science fiction, plays, you know, all the kinds of things that their audience, which they realized had a pain point. They don't know what's going on in the world. They don't know what to read. They don't know what's entertaining, what great books they should be reading, what novels they should be reading. Well, they could offer that value to their audience. And now it's the number two reason that their clients stay loyal to them every single year. Number one, thankfully, is their research, which is always good. But number two is this stupid little book club that they launched. And that starts to think, how do we look at this as a product, not about what duplicates what's already out there, but what's not there? What cool idea can we bring to bear that's not existing that expands our relationship with that audience?
You know, I love that example. It makes me think of Anthony Fasano started the Engineering Management Institute years ago because his target audience were civil engineers, and he thought that they didn't have enough leadership education. So all of his podcasts and everything, they focused on the leadership complement that engineers need, not anything else that you'd think around engineering. And it took off like crazy. And now he's super successful with that. But that move made all the difference. That's really good. Love that.
That's exactly it. All right. What do you got next?
All right. So my next two, you talk about pillar content projects a lot. So I don't want people to do. Then when I think about that, I think about big projects. Like we're going to do a research project. We're going to do a documentary. We're going to do a quarterly magazine, right? Big projects. I wouldn't do this if you haven't built your base yet. I would do this as a diversification. So for example, Content Marketing Institute, we really were diligent about building our blog and our email newsletter audience. And then once we did that and we had a minimum viable audience, then we diversified and created Chief Content Officer Magazine. Then we diversified and created Content Marketing World. So those things, it's really important to remember the timing of this. But once you do that, I feel that a pillar content project can really separate yourself. And if you look back at Content Marketing Institute, I mean, what separated us more than doing that annual research project? Yeah. That we broke up ultimately into B2C and B2B and enterprise. And it's been significantly successful and still is today. I think we're on 16 years or something.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's been a long time. I think we originally started that thing in 2008 with Marketing Profs, and it's crazy. Still going on today. The documentary, The Story of Content, that you and I were involved, I think that's had well over 1 million people watch that thing. And that thing has been instrumental in getting people into the discipline of content marketing, as well as coming to things like Content Marketing World. So I think that as part of your diversification plan with your product, you know, you're creating this product of content, you've got this content brand. It's like, what can we do? Something significant is important. I think especially today with AI, we talked about this on the last episode, where AI is pulling all this information. They're going to pull information from those that are experts in their particular focus area. And a lot of that can come from pillar projects like magazines. Events would work there, research projects, documentaries, something like that. And also you can get the entire industry involved. Books. How could I forget books? I think every content brand out there should create some kind of a book. See, I'm forgetting the whole book thing. That's the most.
Well, you're wearing
thing.
The t-shirt and everything.
I'm wearing the t-shirt. I know. Yeah. So that's that one. And then number six would be, of course, leading into. I'm not going to stay long on this one, Robert, but you know how I feel. What is the one place, the there one thing you can deliver that has 100% deliverability and has competition today?
Print.
Creating something like a quarterly or even a 2-time-a-year publication and delivering it to your audience. There's so much clutter online. It's more difficult than ever to break through. We've just talked about this, to build a loyal audience that knows, likes, and trusts you. A really good way to break through is to deliver. You probably have the addresses of your audience, of your customers, and you can deliver an amazing a magazine to them. And what comes to mind is I worked with this company years ago, Altair Engineering. When we first started working with them, they had a couple dozen employees, and they were an engineering software group out of Michigan, and they were having trouble getting meetings with their decision makers that would spec out their software. And they created a magazine called Concept to Reality. And those people would get that magazine and they would call, or when the salespeople did call them, they would take the calls. It's like, hey, did you get the magazine? Whatever. Yes. That magazine was amazing, did incredible. And if you look, just look at Altair stock price today, Altair Engineering and what they've been able to do. And I really think a lot of that goes to the fact that the magazine was able to break through. They had that 100% deliverability. And that was then. That was when print was still a thing.
Sure.
Like today, nobody's doing it, but look at what Amazon is doing, what Lego's doing, what Red Bull is doing, what Walmart is doing. They're all investing in print. So there's something to it, folks. But I would say there's a print opportunity there to go a little bit old school. And by the way, when I laid this on the social media marketing audience, I had to apologize. I said, this is not social media, but it'll give you something to talk about.
It's really it.
So anyways, I'm a huge believer in print magazines, print books. I think there's an opportunity there. Anything where you're using the postal service
100%
to deliver something amazing.
And you have to get, you should totally do this. As you were talking, I was like reminded of the scene in The Dark Knight Rises, right? The Batman scene where they're like, you know, Deshi Basara, what does it mean? It means rise up. And then you should just overdub that with print. What does it mean? It means deliverability.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's beautiful. That's awesome.
Got to do that. That would be a funny thing. All right. My third one. And I actually talked, this was my talk last year at CEX. And was a point in this talk was, to think about what you're doing as a consistent basis. You know, one of the things that really helps, think about an editorial mindset for this product that you're creating or for whatever it is you're doing from a content marketing perspective is to create a messaging architecture around it. In other words, how are you actually speaking as a business, right? Because one of the risks is that different people understand your thought leadership program, your inspiration program, your thought, you know, whatever it is you're doing from an editorial perspective on that blog or on that magazine or on that email newsletter, and don't really understand, or in that community even, and don't understand what is the point of view. And it's different than the brand, right? It's different than the brand. And the example that I use, which I just love, is, and this goes back to your acquisition thing, which is Pendo, right? So Pendo is a software company. They're a startup software company. They've grown very, very quickly. They're I guess a mid-sized software company now, but started very small. And they deal with product marketing software, right? So theirs is all about analytics and insight into what your digital product is doing. And it's a whole, you know, it's a whole suite of products that they have for digital products. So their target market is product managers and product marketers, right? Product, you know, product people at its site. They acquired a community called Mind the Product, right? And which was a really cool acquisition. We covered it on our show before, but Mind the Product is a community of dun 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 product marketers, product managers who talk about the best practices in that. And the key was leaving it alone, not getting into trying to talk about the features and all the things that Pendo does as a sole part of that editorial, but rather developing a point of view around what it is that Mind the Product was going to believe about the world. And the example I use is, and it's right from their press release. They actually say it in their press release. Now, I don't think that they consciously went, ooh, I need to develop Robert Rose's point of view architecture. No, they actually just did this because they're smart people. And the key is that I'm reading this, the Pendo CEO, when he talked about the acquisition, he said, look, our mission is to elevate the craft of product management and to help product managers be better at what they do. That's the mission of the company, right? But it's not a point of view on the world. Right. When you think about the point of view on the world, you actually go to the mission statement of Mind the Product. And right in their mission statement of Mind the Product says, product management is much more than a job title. It's a discipline and to some a calling. Developing these architectures and understanding them across the entirety of the business is what's critical today. In other words, that's much broader. It's a much broader opinion about the belief about the world that product marketing is a calling and that we have to answer that call for all of product marketing. So that's a really, it's not just helping you be better at your job, but it's helping you answer the call of what it is, you know, so emotional help and inspiration and community and all the things that they can offer as part of that point of view is it's a very subtle but very important difference in the way that you position whatever it is you're out there doing. So developing that point of view architecture and that messaging architecture is a critical point of it. And by the way, it's, you know, it's, I detail how to do all that in the, I won't go into that here, but that's, it's a critical thing of making sure that everybody understands what the mission, you often talk about the mission of the publication, right?
Yep.
And that's really that idea.
Yeah. I love that. I think a lot of people confuse the mission of the brand with the mission of your 100%. Content brand.
That's what I mean.
And that's where to help that, whether you call it a content marketing mission statement, content mission statement, editorial mission, you really need to build that out. Like you just gave a great example of it. But everyone listening to this, you need to have your content mission statement so you understand and your team understands what's the goal of this thing. It's not about if you any good mission statement, content mission statement does not sell, say we want to sell more widgets.
Right.
It says, here's our target audience. Here's what we're going to deliver to that target audience. And here's the outcome for the audience. We're helping them live a better life, get a better job, inspire them. What are we trying to do? And that will guide your editorial.
Our so point really, of view, what really we important. Believe about the world, like what we believe about the world to be true and why that's good for people, right?
Yeah. And speaking of mission, we need to pay some bills.
Oh, that's fantastic news. I forgot all about that. We got so excited. Yeah, we forgot to pay the bills.
We got so excited talking about our presentations that we forgot. So we're going to share this.
Roll that beautiful bean footage, would you? You ever wonder what unicorns eat for breakfast? All right, I don't actually know the answer to that, but what I do know is that 20% of all unicorn startups, they're using HubSpot, and for good reason. HubSpot's all-in-one platform levels up your sales, software, and support. Plus, they have a huge collection of resources to help startups scale. And with HubSpot for Startups program, you can save big off your first year. To see if you're eligible to save on HubSpot, visit HubSpot.com/startups. Want a cool new podcast for your commute? Well, let me give you a nudge. Yeah, that's right, Nudge. Nudge is hosted by Phil Agnew and focuses on how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact. It's a show with simple, evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, and grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice from admired entrepreneurs and behavioral scientists. Nudge is fast-paced, but still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's also the UK's fastest growing business podcast. Here's your nudge to get nudge wherever you follow your favorite podcasts.
Nudge.
I like it. It's one of those words when you say it so many times, it's one of those ones that loses like nudge. It just loses its meaning. It's like, what does that even mean? Nudge.
I'm going to nudge it.
My dad used to tell me he would every time I was being an annoying little kid, my dad would go, don't be a nudge.
That's different.
Yeah.
The nudge. I don't think that Phil wants that to be associated with nudge.
No, we're not saying that Phil is a, we're not saying that Phil is a nudge. We're saying that his podcast is called
Nudge.
Nudge.
All right, I'm going to finish up there here, talk about a couple things. We've talked a little bit about the moving parts here, but my seventh tip was about bringing all this together into a very successful email newsletter and the importance specifically with everyone's focus on rented land, whether that's Twitter X, whether that's Instagram, whether that's TikTok, and how we all know this, right? At any time, you could lose your channel. Even on YouTube, they could kick you off. The algorithm doesn't work in your favor. And what do you have? And it could be, you should wake up every day with the idea that that's great. you have these social media channels, you want to build relationships, you want to communicate on them, you want to build audience, fans, whatever the case is, but find a way to take that energy and push that into a very successful email newsletter where at least you have some control. And when you're going to send out communications, you get opt-in approval for them from your audience to communicate with them. And if you just need, you know, if you need more reassurance that this is the way to go, look at any successful media company out there. Look at the New York Times, look at Financial Times, look at not Vice, not BuzzFeed, the ones that had most of their properties on rented land. You want to focus on the ones that say, hey, we are building audiences. And New York Times is actually really interesting the way they have 60 or 70 different newsletters, vertical newsletters now. And what value, and they're almost the poster child, if you will, for how to move people from social channels into these owned digital properties. So I would just say, and by the way, take your open rates and take your newsletter seriously. I talked to somebody the other day that said, yeah, we've got like a 12% open rate with our newsletter. And it's like, you're probably spamming people, man. Like we should want 30, 40, 50% open rate if we're doing this correctly. I know it's very hard to do, but you want to make sure that what you're delivering in that email is something they can't get anywhere else. That's why you should probably have something in your email marketing that you're delivering consistently that they can't find anywhere else. So that's that one.
Yeah.
And the last one I would say, and if you want a really good reference for this, you should go buy Killing Marketing. Because that's when Robert and I, we created this amazing book, Killing Marketing, which talked about the fact that the marketing department could and should be a profit center. And when you, and I know it's a little far out for a lot of people, but I think we can all start experimenting. Once you build that loyal audience, yes, you have traditional content marketing KPIs that are out there. We might have built this audience. We want to sell products. We might want to sell services. We might want to keep our customers more loyal. We might want to increase the yield of our customers. Those are great. Those are traditional content marketing goals. That's fantastic. But at the same time, you might want to be like Salesforce and launch your own profitable event. You might want to launch a sponsorship, an advertising program that you could profit off of. You might want to launch a book or a premium ebook or a product like that. You might want to launch an affiliate program. You might want to take donations. Whatever the case is, you can actually drive direct revenues that at some point, if you do this really well, like an Arrow Electronics, like a Red Bull, that you don't have to go begging for budget to the chief financial officer that probably doesn't care anything about what you're doing from a content marketing standpoint, because you're creating your own budget and your own revenue. It gives you a lot more flexibility and freedom. And of course, we're all media companies, folks, and that's a media company model. So if you don't believe me, go buy Killing Marketing. We'll put it in the show notes. Check it out. That book is still relevant today. And I think that's the future of marketing departments, that every one of them will be self-sustaining at some point if we do this right. So there you go.
I love it. I love absolutely every part of that.
That was a fun book. We had a good time with that
book. Such a great book.
Because nobody was really talking about that.
It's my favorite of all the books that I've written or co-written, and all of them. Well, that's not true. I've got one with Carla Johnson and two with you.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
You have so many books out there. You have books that you don't even know that you ever
that's
wrote.
That's true. That's 100%
accurate. You have one on back pain.
Yeah, that's right. You have
one on 16th century politics in Europe.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I want to write a book on Anna Karenina and how it's similar to marketing, but that's probably right. You know, Russian literature and marketing are aligned.
That would be a good hook.
It was a good hook. Yeah. I should do a Substack on that. Anyway, my last one here is about trust. And this pertains to not just content marketing, but all of your marketing. So trust is such a huge thing right now. And there's a unique opportunity we have. You know, if you pay attention to Edelman's trust barometer every year, you know, and you don't need Edelman's trust barometer to understand where trust is right now in terms of media, government, institutions like nonprofits and business. You know, and spoiler alert, business is the only remaining trusted institution that's out there. It's the only institution, according to the trust barometer, that's considered both ethical and competent. And I'll let you guess which the other two are. Is like media and government are considered both unethical and so it is not uncommon these days for business brands to have more trust with their audience than the media brands that they're advertising on. So just let that sink in for a minute there and think about what you're doing from a brand advertising standpoint. And it starts to, as it starts to sink in, what you start to realize is that every experience we have, whether it's a sales-oriented experience of our website, whether it's a content marketing experience of our blog, whether it's the content marketing experience of our email newsletter, or whether it's the loyalty play of our customer community, whatever those goals and objectives are, every single one of them needs to be developing and delivering deeper trust. Then you start to go, okay, well, what the hell is trust, right? What does trust mean? Well, Rachel Botsman, who is an amazing researcher in the area of trust, and go read everything you can from her, which there's really only a couple of things. There's a book and a professorial sort of paper on trust, but she calls it sort of our relationship to the unknown. Basically, you know, it's our confidence in our relationship to the unknown. And what I'd like to say, it's our relationship to uncertain outcomes, right? In other words, what are our relationships to the outcomes that are uncertain? And quite honestly, if you think about it, every marketing experience you're creating for a new customer has sort of an uncertain outcome. And it goes back to what I talked about with the butter provider and the generator provider. And yes, of course, the butter provider needs to, there's a different amount of trust needed for buying a stick of butter than there is for buying a $100,000 generator for your building. So I understand that those things are different, and you should too, as you start to develop the kinds of experiences that you're building across the buyer's journey. So the best practice is go do what we call a trust audit for all of those experiences. So you're going to look at every experience you have, and you're basically going to look at that includes your social media channels, it includes your email newsletter, it includes your website, everything where you're creating an experience for customer. And I want you to look at it through three lenses. The first is, does it demonstrate trust? In other words, it doesn't just claim and demand trust from people. You know, in other words, are you gating white papers, right? That's not creating and demonstrating trust. So are you actually demonstrating some level of trust? Doesn't mean you can't gate a white paper, but are you in other ways demonstrating trust for why they should sign up for that white paper? So does it demonstrate trust? And give it a red, yellow, green if you want, right? So on that experience. The second is look at it through the lens of Maya, M-A-Y-A. And that's a design principle that there are books on this, there you can go read about this, but basically it stands for most advanced yet accepted. And the Maya principle is this. Basically, we as humans will get icked out basically by things that are too new for us. So if your brand is out there trying to do something that's like really weird and just odd, it's not going to really create that accepted, the yet accepted. You know, it might be the most advanced thing ever. Like, for example, I used the book club earlier with the consulting firm. If they'd come out and said, here's how to prevent heart attacks, right? Or here's diets that you could take. Like, people would go, wait, what are they doing? Like, what, that's not, but as book reviews, as, you know, sort of, you know, content and it aligns, you can see it's advanced, yet I can understand that how they would do it. So look at your experiences through that lens and see if you're either way outside the boundary or inside the boundaries of where you should be. Again, red, yellow, green. And the third is consistency. Does each of the experiences as they go through your customer's journey develop more and intimate levels of trust? And it doesn't have to be a lot, but it has, the one that follows the one at the top of the funnel should be a deeper level of trust or demonstration of trust than the one before it. In other words, you're going to be starting to have people hold their attention, keep their attention through that, you know, so the deeper you get into that journey, the deeper you get into that relationship, you want to develop more and more trust, and that will make things happen faster and faster and faster. So do that audit and then see where you might want to start to put some content, editorial, tweaking, design, whatever those changes are that to all of your experiences to develop a deeper level of trust with your customers.
I love the trust audit. I love it. Any type of content audit is always a good.
Exactly.
Sometimes we get so busy into the day to day or our contents, we have to stop on a regular basis and just look around. And
I mean, the classic example of that is you have the top of the journey, right? You build this beautiful, wonderful thought leadership blog that demonstrates value. It demonstrates trust. And where do you send them to? The call to action is to talk to a salesperson who immediately starts trying to sell you something. It's like, whoa. Yep. And that jarring sort of notion is so difficult that it's like, no, you need a bridge there. You need to demonstrate more trust before you move into that element of the relationship. And so it's like, how do we make that more elegant? How do we make that a deeper demonstration of you trust us? So now we're going to talk to you about what we have to offer to you.
Well, we said that we could do this in around 30 minutes.
And that is not true.
We succeeded again.
Yes, that is not true.
we can't do anything.
No.
Every special episode. I think that's a 20-minute episode. I really do. No.
It's not. It's not. You and I talk a lot. So there you go.
Good. All right. So we'll be back with our regular scheduled programming next week.
We will. I think we will be back with the news next week, and we'll have a regular old news show talking about all the things that are new. You got anything coming up?
That's it. I'm actually going to stay in town most of March.
Oh, well, thank God for that.
I know. Crazy. As we lead into CEX and we finalize the agenda and get everything going for that. So very exciting for CEX coming up. And we're launching our new group book, The Content Entrepreneur, on the Tilt Publishing imprint. That'll launch at CEX.
Fantastic.
So I'm excited about that. So working on that, working on the marketing, and then trying to do very little of anything else.
I'll be honest with you,
because that's a lot. That's a lot. How about you? What do you got going on?
We're out there sort of hanging up the sign saying basically, hi, we're out here, we're doing stuff. And if anybody wants to work with content strategists, content marketing, we're here. We're offering the new fractional services. So I've been working a lot on our marketing and on our content.
Where do people go? Where should people go?
They could go to contentadvisory.net, the little website that we maintain there, and or subscribe to the newsletter that we always put into the show notes and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. All right, everybody. Well, we will be back again next week with a regularly set of wonderful news programming and general chuckleheadedness. Until then, just remember, it's your story to tell. Tell it well. We will see you next week on This Old Marketing.